The following may not be true. Any and all illegal activities should be assumed to be the fabrications of trained improvisers and taken as entertainment. Any offensive views or opinions discussed are likely the result of an inability to process context and intention over predisposition, and are not endorsed by any current or potential sponsors. In these cases, it should be assumed that the offensive material is likely the result of an emotional masochism within the observer. We assure offended parties it is not necessary to contact us in thanks. It is our pleasure to fulfill your want and need. Should the offended still feel the need to contact us, please do so at unopenedemail@yahoo.com. Thank you, and enjoy. Life.
With guitar!
996 BC.
Know you're right.
Bit of an unconventional episode.
Number one.
Don't really know what we're doing over here, you know? We're learning. More than we're learning, we're innovating and changing, which are really just fancy learning. I don't know. What's the difference between innovating and learning? Innovating is doing something, right? Learning is understanding. Huh. But you have innovative ideas. Well, that's something I should just Google. Let's look it up. Innovate.
The definition of innovate: make changes in something established, especially by introducing new methods, ideas, or products.
All right. So innovation is doing something. You're making a change. And that's why there's innovative ideas, because they change the way people think, right? To learn, however, learn.
Here's the definition of learn: gain or acquire knowledge of or skill in something by study, experience, or being taught.
There you go. Doesn't change much that you know it. You learned something. Anyway. Today, just me and Cindy, my girl. She is often smarter, definitely more gentle spirit. I don't know what you want to call it. Just a good person, I guess. I mean, look, guys. Maybe I'm not, but I feel like I'm just an asshole. You know? I mean, don't get me wrong. I've met bigger assholes. People who fuck with people on the reg. You know? But me, I just like to fuck with other assholes. My favorite is when I find an asshole who doesn't take it personal. When two assholes who aren't taking it personally start giving each other shit, it's really a thing of beauty. But I guess what I'm saying is, Cindy's not an asshole. And I'm not an asshole to Cindy. At least I don't think I am. So I've learned to play the role for the part I'm given, the play I'm in? Question mark? Anyway, I know, love, and trust Cindy, so having conversations like these aren't hard to do with her, though it was very odd to record. I think me and her probably could have dug deeper if we needed to, if we weren't recording. I know I could have, I guess. And even then, weird time. It's hard to even ask a question. And honestly, why does it care what I think? Or why does it matter? What I think is interesting. I said, why does it care? It seems like the world cares about what we think, doesn't it? We get a lot of feedback now. I still think the world doesn't care what I think. Maybe I'm wrong. That being said, today, not a barrel of yuck yucks. If you're looking for, I guess, the other side of the pillow, this is for you. Cindy, C, we'll say, my girl and me, episode 969 BC.
Instead of being a stupid comment, a microaggression,
right, so
is a mistake.
Might as well pause this thing. Are you just... What's the... sorry, what's the modus operandi here? Are you just going to give the talk? Are we going to talk about it?
Yeah, I was just going to be like, this is a video I was talking to you about.
Okay, so the video is called How Microaggressions Are Like Mosquito Bites, Same Difference. And it's on YouTube. And Cindy evidently has given a, what do you want to call it, a talk on this before?
No, we led like a microaggression workshop.
Workshop. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, it was me and three other world doctors, I guess. Just talking about how you deal with people who say things that are really kind of like bothersome in the workplace. So,
in the
for
workplace.
People who still don't think that microaggressions are a problem.
Oh, you're so well spoken.
Oh. Just imagine, instead of being a stupid comment, a microaggression is a mosquito bite.
Ugh, it's a compliment.
Mosquito bites and their itch are one of nature's most annoying features.
Agreed.
But if you're only bitten every once in a while.
No, where are you really?
Cindy has a real problem with mosquitoes. They
sure,
love her.
It's annoying.
Mosquitoes
but it's
should never be in the world.
Is that some people get bitten by mosquitoes a lot more than other people.
Those folks look like that. Look like you, dear. I'll stand right next to her and I get nothing.
So good.
Excuse me?
Going grocery shopping.
You know, everything happens for a reason.
I'm just buying apples.
Commuting to work.
So when are you going to have a baby?
Watching TV.
We have to keep the Redskins name. It's part of our culture and history.
Or just walking down the street with your partner.
I couldn't even tell you were gay.
Mosquitoes seem to pop up everywhere.
Do you know, John, give me shopping advice.
The animations are kind of funny.
So gross.
Getting bit by mosquitoes
yeah.
every goddamn day.
Can I touch your hair?
Multiple times a day.
It's
fucking annoying. And makes you want to go ballistic on those mosquitoes. Which seems like a huge overreaction to people who only get bit every once in a while.
It's just a mosquito bite. Who cares?
Just another angry black one.
Of course, beyond just being annoying, some mosquitoes carry truly threatening diseases that can mess up your life for years.
Astrophysics? Maybe you should try less challenging major.
Ow, my dreams.
Another mosquito carries strains that can even kill you.
It looked like he was up to trouble, okay? I felt threatened.
So next time you think someone's overreacting, just remember, some people experience mosquito bites all the time.
You're all so exotic, wow.
And by mosquito bites, we mean microaggressions.
Same difference. That's the final.
Yeah, that's it. That's the video.
All right, so this video, what inspired you to give a talk, or you just showed this video?
No, as we were putting together the talk, we were just looking around for information. I don't need this. And we came across this video, or one of the girls did, and they shared it. I don't think we actually ended up playing it during the actual workshop because we didn't have enough time to fit it in, but it was just, I think it's a pretty fair analogy to what microaggressions are. It's just kind of like annoying little jabs, basically.
You know, and I hadn't even thought about those as microaggressions, honestly. That's like not categorically what I thought microaggressions were. I kind of thought of and maybe I'm the idiot. I probably am the idiot here. I always thought of microaggressions as like when you're talking to people and people are just kind of like passively aggressively a dick. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't really think about them just like everyday comments that people receive that are like, I don't know, that's interesting. I feel that way about the way, I don't know. Never mind. I'm not going to explore.
What? Why? Will you feel a way about what?
About how it's what is the word? Antithetical? Does that mean opposite of? Or in opposition to? Is that correct?
Antithesis? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. It's kind of antithetical to the whole scenario, the way I was thinking, which is...
What were you thinking?
Well, I was thinking about joking and stuff, and... I just don't know if I want to spend a lot of time, like, dealing with people who are going to try to, I don't know. This whole thing is about saying, people who did not watch it, the cartoon characters were very obviously
colorized brown, and then the mosquitoes would come in and fuck with them. And that's kind of the whole point is racism of this. They're disguising it as microaggression, but they're really tackling the topic of microaggression as it applies to racism, as far as I can tell from the video.
Yeah, some of it. They also say that, you know, microaggression doesn't have to be just about race. Some of it was like a disabled person in a wheelchair or a gay couple.
Agreed. Yes, I guess minorities, if you wanted to call them something. There's not as many wheelchair people as there are regular folks.
Yeah, I mean,
and see, that's a microaggression by the type of, by what that video said. What I just did there was a microaggression. I said, there's less wheelchair people than regular folks. You know what I mean? Isn't that weird?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily...
It could be interpreted as one, and that's what I hate, is the tap dancing. I hate the damn tap dancing, so I don't know if I want to be friends with a bunch of tap dancers. And that's fine. I'm not telling people they can't be that way. What I'm saying is that I can't be that way. So
this is the definition of microaggression. It is everyday verbal, nonverbal, or environmental slights, snubs, insults, whether intentional or unintentional, which communicate hostile, derogatory, or negative messages to target persons based solely upon their marginalized group membership. So you're right. It's like people who are minorities for one form or the other based on some sort of characteristics. Microaggression
is not a thing unless I'm in China for me.
Yeah, I suppose. But even if you were in China and they were commenting about something that's unrelated to you being like somehow stand out for something, like if they talk about your shirt or something, that's probably not a microaggression.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is the crux of this definition, and where did you find it?
I have a reference somewhere, but this is from an article.
Okay.
And we just pulled it into our presentation.
Okay. Sorry, I just lost track of my thought. The crux of this definition is being a marginalized group. And I think by the current definition, I'm not in a marginalized group. So,
yeah,
I'm incapable of being microaggressed against. So, which is good. Take that, anybody who tries it. Ha! You got nothing on me. I can't be microaggressed.
I mean, I certainly think it's like what you said when you were a kid, and maybe people pointed out stuff about your hair or like your punk persona. That could be a microaggression. Like, say a comment about how, like, oh, I'm surprised you did, like, as well as you did on your math test. Because they presume, like, a punk kid doesn't want to go to school and study. You know, that kind of stuff. Which I know you actually didn't, like, go to school and study.
Right, I fit the stereotype.
Yeah.
All that aside, who gives a shit? The mechanism of the microaggression is what I'm more interested in. I mean, regardless of who you point the gun at, you got to figure out a way to disarm the gun. So we got the microaggression. What's, if any, I guess you gave this workshop, what were some of the conclusions you guys were trying to draw?
Well, so we basically took some of the advice from like a national leader talking about ways to address discrimination. And these are kind of some of her suggestions, which are basically strategies to open up a conversation when you're kind of on a one-on-one in situation. So like, for example, it says ask for clarifications to help understand intentions, which is like what you were saying about how somebody maybe is just not aware of what they were saying. Or, you know, coming from a stance of telling people about what that statement makes you feel, you know, like, I feel like when you say something like this.
So I'm looking at you want to call this a slideshow?
Yeah.
A slideshow, and it says action plan on the left has the word action in an acronym, letter A. Is this where we're at here? Mm-hmm. Ask for clarification to help understand intentions. I went to make sure I can't
understand.
I can't read it.
Understand.
What you're saying.
Were you saying? Yeah.
So that's what you're supposed to do to respond to microaggression?
Yeah. So, I mean, you basically want to address it head on rather than kind of let it slide under the table. And that's why it's an action plan, because you want to take an action about what the person is saying. But there are ways to do it without being like a total ass about it, you know? Like the second thing for C, like come from curiosity.
So not you
don't
judgment.
Have, don't just
come
be like,
curiosity, not judgment.
So. Wow, that was racist. Just be like, oh, just curious. What made you say that? You know, and everybody is willing. I think most people are willing to explain themselves when you're asked in a very like non-judgmental manner.
I agree. Well, sometimes we get into these mental chess games though, where we get real butthurt about just like if someone says, "What are your intentions?" Now you're saying that you might feel if your intentions were good, especially exclusively, I guess. That your judgment is being questioned. And you're like, you seriously think that that's what I meant? You know, like that might be the way your mind frames it. And I think that's where things start to snowball, you know?
And I think that's why you have to, I don't know. I mean, I tell you a lot. I always think it's kind of about the tone and how you deliver and how you phrase something. Because that is where that defensive stance happens, is when you say like, oh, I'm just curious, what made you say that? And the person says, whoa, like, are you challenging me? Are you telling me I'm a bad person for saying what I said? And you're like, no, I'm genuinely just like curious. What made you say that? Like, what kind of experience did you have that make you come to those conclusions? You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's great. It's an action plan. It's better than I had before, which is lying by the seat of my pants, I guess. All right. Letter C of action we just did come from a place
of curiosity,
not judgment.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and this is for, it seems to be a first person perspective. This is not if you're observing from the outside and butting into someone else's conversation. Is that correct?
No, it is. So the scenario is that we had a few different like case vignettes, which are basically like practice scenarios of when these things might actually happen. And some of them are like one-on-one situations where you're the one that's literally experiencing that, like some weird comment from somebody. But other scenarios are when you are the, like maybe a bystander, when two people are having interactions and you witness something like that happen. And you can use that in any of those situations.
All right. And now, if you don't question the intention, if you observed it and someone used the proper tone, but like, for instance, when I just said there's less wheelchair people than regular people,
mm-hmm.
and you didn't even catch it, but say you did catch it, but you're like, oh, he didn't mean nothing. Do you still call me out?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's where you have to use, I was going to say clinical judgment, but I think that's when you just kind of have to use your own judgment. Like when you were saying that, did you mean it as a discriminatory, derogatory statement, or were you stating it as a matter of fact? Like, are there more people in wheelchairs and there are people not in wheelchairs?
Right.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
If you were saying more like people in wheelchairs shouldn't necessarily be more accommodated because there are less people in wheelchairs than there are more people in wheelchairs, then that would be, sorry, I had to check myself. I was like, was that the right way?
So you're saying like when I go to the auto parts store and the handicap things are on the opposite side of the lot and I'm like, yes, and I can park right up front. That's bad.
No, but I'm saying that if you make comments such as, which I know you do sometimes, like, oh, why are there so many handicap spots right here in front of the giant eagle?
Yep.
Then maybe there, that would be a place where you would point out some sort of clarification. Like,
yeah.
What makes you feel so frustrated when there are 5 handicapped spots and a parking lot with like 50 spots?
Shouldn't you just be grateful you have legs that you can walk past those spots and right into the store?
Right. But again, that's judgment, right? So you want to be curious and explore.
Yes. Right. Right.
And then you can point out, how do you think other people, like the people who actually need those spots would feel if you say that? No, that's a part of the action plan.
Okay. Are we getting tea on action? We're at the act. Tell others what is problematic in a factual manner. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell others what is problematic in a factual manner.
Yeah, and obviously you don't have to go through the entire action.
I just quoted
my fingers.
Right.
You don't have to go through the entire action every time you see something. Yeah.
These are all different tools that can be used.
Yeah.
Essentially, yes.
For sure.
Not a...
Well, I mean, you can use all of them in one setting, but you don't have to. I mean, these are just advice for, like, suggestions for how to tackle something. Because a lot of people feel like, oh, I kind of wish I could say something, but then they're not quite sure how to approach. And it's, like, pretty uncomfortable. Like, when we ran the workshop, a lot of people did end up feeling like they didn't even necessarily quite know how to approach, even with some of these, like, structures in place. So, I mean, the workshop just gives you, like, a really preliminary overview in, like, an hour and 15 minutes, right, of, like, oh, here are some things you can use, but then you really have to, like, try to practice it a few times to get better at talking to people about these things.
Yeah, you definitely have to practice it, and you're going to screw some of them up.
Yeah,
and those are going to be bad situations.
Yeah, so... yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think just because you learn that something like this exists automatically makes you, like, feel extremely empowered and be like, I can solve the world now.
No, I agree. And somebody will come up with another plan in 50 years or less, so.
Yeah, and I mean, like,
it's fine to have multiple plans.
There are just so many scenarios that you can't predict that things don't always run as smoothly as you would like to imagine that you can use something like this, because I don't know if you remember, but I think we were in Lincoln. It was Lincoln or Omaha, or even maybe just the waterfront here one time, but we saw some kids, like, or some white dude screaming at this group of black kids that were dancing. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't think that would have been here. I don't remember. Okay.
It was really weird. The guy was, like, very clearly drunk or high or something, but he was screaming at these. Oh, can you see here?
Yeah, it's fine.
Three kids, or it was like just a few group of kids that were practicing their dancing or something on a stage.
Yeah.
But the white guy just, like, was screaming at them, and I'm pretty sure he made some racial slurs, but
that was here in Pittsburgh when we left the movie theater, is that correct?
Yeah,
dude, that guy said
it was waterfront.
We followed that guy.
Yeah, and we were walking right behind them, but the whole time the two of us were just like, should we say something? Like, this sounds really wrong.
That's exactly what this is about. He was being a total dick.
Yeah. But, like, we never actually approach any of these things, right? Even though I actually know I have some of the tools to engage in a conversation, like, I was like, this guy seems aggressive, and I don't really know if I necessarily feel empowered, like, enough to approach him and be like, hey, dude, how do you think what you're saying make those kids feel? Like, I was just like, I feel really awful for these kids right now, but I'm also scared to engage this person.
Well, that's the thing, is me and you could get in trouble. I don't know. We did follow the guy. I followed the guy long enough to make sure he was out of the neighborhood or whatever, but...
That's true.
Regardless, assholes like that, you are great at talking to people, right? And that's great. But I don't want to be in front of a guy like that. It's because if he was ever aggressive towards you, or even me, I would have taken that opportunity, I guess. You know what I mean?
Oh, you would have, like, punched him.
Yeah, if that guy said something and there was enough of a threat, yeah, I wouldn't have any... I mean, that would have been fine by me, especially after seeing what kind of dude he was, so...
Yeah, I mean, I think... There's definitely, we need way more tool bags than, like, what we talked about at this workshop that was telling you the action plan to address these things. But Definitely there are different scenarios where, like, you really just need to use other stuff, other strategies. Like, at the protests, for example, I don't think this strategy I'm talking about would work at all. This is really, I think, much more for just,
it's
like...
workplace, isn't it?
One-on-one. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even just have to be workplace, though. It's, like, in a very more, like, calm setting, I would think, where you know the other individual is, like, sensible and, like, open to having a conversation.
Where you're taken away from the crowd mentality.
Yeah. So, but it is good because you have to start somewhere, right? And if you can start when people are calm and receptive, then it's much better to, like, have interventions then than wait until things boil over and people are, like, taken over by their emotions.
That's true. It's hard to talk through emotions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what we teach kids all the time who have, like, explosive outbursts. We're like, you gotta practice your deep breathing skills all the time, even when you feel like you don't need it, because you have to make it a habit so that when things get real bad, you remember, like, oh, reflexively, this is something I do that calms me down. So.
Oh, kiddos. This is the whole action plan?
It is, yeah. Right.
This is your whole TED Talk, we're going to call it?
It was not a TED Talk.
We're on I, is that correct?
Yeah, I guess so. State the impact. Well, we kind of talked about that.
Of the action by others.
Like, what do you think that other people
feel? It's kind of redundant with the tell others what's problematic.
Yeah.
On your thoughts by using first-person language. That's a good one. I think it's good to take possessive. Not enough people say things about themselves instead of...
Well, I think I agree. That comes to the fact of, like, we want to make sure we're not also just, like, over-generalizing, right? So you want to just, I think, own your thoughts is very reasonable. Like, this is how I feel. This is what I think.
Yeah.
I'm not saying maybe this is how you feel or you think.
Or even worse, that this is what is. To think that your thoughts are the law of the land is like a God complex. You know, when people don't use any you or I, it's like, this is. That's terrible to me, but I guess not to some.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really, really hard not to overgeneralize because the human mind kind of wants to just, like, categorize, right? So things that seem to happen slightly more frequently in your own perception becomes the norm and becomes the dominant theory in your head. And that's why, like, sometimes when we argue or when kids argue, I talk about kids a lot because I work with kids, but we have this concept of overgeneralizing. We're always like, is that an overgeneralization? Do you really think that's true? Or you're just saying that because you're not challenging all the other instances when it's not true. And when we argue, that pops up a lot too, right? Like, when it comes, I'm like, Aaron, I know you're just overgeneralizing all the instances when this happened between us, but we know it's not true. So, yeah, I don't know. That's a little bit tangential, but I think it's good to not overgeneralize how everybody reacts to a situation, and owning your thought is a helpful way to do that.
All right.
Yeah.
The defense rests. And on action.
So N is next steps. Basically, I think it's really like the action part of this action plan. So kind of holding the person accountable. Be like, do you think you're going to do something different next time?
That's it. Mm. It says right here on the paper, next steps and check in with the target. Now, that's some pretty harsh wording. This doesn't seem necessarily like a peaceful action.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it could use a different word than target.
I don't know. I think that the whole thing is, and this is me in a nutshell, I don't want anyone to tell me how to live, because I want to be able to figure it out, because I think that that's the basis for infinite potential, is exploring an unexplored path. So when people tell me how to live, I get upset. So in order to not be a hypocrite, I try not to tell people how to live. And this follow up with people and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to have to differ on that one. I'm not into that. I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to say something when it happens. I'm not going to go find the drunk guy next to the movie theater the following week and make sure he's not harassing those kids. I'm just going to say something and be done with it. Hold no grudges.
Yeah. I mean, I think that probably is easier in that situation because you're not going to see that person again and you don't know how aggressive they are.
Even if it was somebody I was going to see all the time, I think that it would be extremely arrogant to come up to them and try to start a conversation about an old conversation and see if they've grown any since. I mean, that seems exactly in opposition to the way I want to be treated, so I don't think I would want to treat people that way.
So then how would you elicit change in that person? Like, how would you know that person feels like they're being held accountable?
Well, if they were, in my judgment, being a dick, of whatever type you want to categorize, I would do something then, if they were over the line. And then the next day would be a new day. I would always remember that that person's capable of that, but I wouldn't, I wouldn't every day walk up to them with a chip on my shoulder. That would be a life I would not want to live.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one of the things, though, is, like, we're pointing out very specific actions that the person displayed when we're addressing these microaggressions, right? You try to keep it pretty focused and specific. We're not saying, like, you are a bad person. We're saying, like, hey, check yourself.
Right, but that's what hey, check yourself means, especially if you say, hey, check yourself, the guy checks himself, and then you walk up the next day, and you say, you still in check, bro? I mean, that's some pretty aggressive talk about microaggressions. I mean,
yeah, I don't know if it's a like you need to check in every single day type situation.
I'm just saying it seems a lot of it seems a little self-serving, and that's fine. And there's definitely a problem. I mean, there's just people don't want to be harassed. What I like to do is find people who do like to be harassed, and then I let them harass me.
Why?
Because as long as they like being harassed, they're not a hypocrite, and I can harass them too. You know what I mean?
Mm-mm.
There's a verbal jousting that people can do with one another that's basically training for a real life scenario, except for fun, because there's no real threat of violence. You and your friends can sit around and say mean things to each other and laugh at one another, and because of that, you're more prepared when a real asshole is there, and then you have a clear brain, and you're capable of having control of your emotion, right? You know what I mean? When you're in a real life threatening situation where violence is a possibility, it's very hard to keep your thoughts in a line. You know what I mean? And I think that it is helpful to have been in that situation before, but in front of a friend, you know?
Sure. I also don't think in those situations you'll be using any of these strategies.
I agree. I agree. I'm just saying that there are two different types of people, and that's kind of what I'm trying to get at. Some folks don't want to be harassed ever, and that's fine. As soon as I find out that that person, not that group of people that I'm going to categorize, but that person, that individual, doesn't like being harassed, I'm going to stop harassing that individual.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not opposed to having people who like to do that. I mean, I don't know. That's the whole point of a roast, you know, is to harass your friends. And I don't think either of us are disagreeing. We think that it's not an aggression in those cases.
Right. I was just going to say, are you equating harassment with microaggression? Like,
no. What I'm saying is that on my pathway to finding friends, I might offend a few people. And I guess I should have just said it more clearly. On my pathway to finding that type of people, which are the type of people I desire to be around, I'm going to offend a few people, but then I'm not going to target them again. I'm going to realize they're not the type of person who does this.
Right. Because the people who you actually harassed that told you, like, that's not cool, man. They use probably some of these things.
Yeah,
they pointed out to you, like, that is not cool. Like, to me, I take offense to that. And I don't think you should be doing that. And then you're just like, okay. And that's the thing. It's like most of this workshop and, like, this kind of stuff we talk about are kind of like, you know, in the broad sense of things right now, people are saying, like, we don't want to just target people who are actively racist. We're trying to target people who are kind of just sitting by. And this is kind of similar concept, honestly. It's like, we are not necessarily targeting people who are intentionally offensive. We're targeting the people who maybe just don't realize what they're saying is considered microaggression.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to use the words because they're almost, you're raising awareness, you know?
It is.
Yeah. I mean, and I was talking about it with Jared, and I believe on our last podcast about it is important for the numbers game, like out there on the, especially the peaceful rallies. I mean, definitely in the violent ones, if you want the violent ones, you need numbers. But regardless, what you want is not the discussion. This discussion is the strength of numbers, and that's what we do have over government. There's nothing government fears more than an unruly mob, and that's gonna elicit change. And I know that's probably a little, that's more of a macro aggression, I guess.
I was like, that's a lot more like physical.
But you started talking about the whole current state of affairs of the United States of America. So
yeah,
I just got on a tangent.
I mean, I think the awareness thing in general, sometimes it does kind of blow my mind. I was just talking to somebody about how, you know, my status and my life experience, I think, inherently just like put me in a different category of awareness. But I mean, in this workshop, I used one of my actual examples. Like, I walked into a patient's room, and it's so typical. We experience this pretty frequently, I think, but like people will be like, are you from Japan? Which I'm like, okay, whatever. But then later I come back in with another physician, and the patient commented to the physician like, oh, isn't she a beauty? She's so exotic. And the physician actually was like, yeah, she's pretty special. I was like, what the fuck is happening here? Like, that is definitely a microaggression. Like, why would you think that's okay and just let that slide and perpetuate, like, yes, you can talk about people that look like they're from Asia in this way. Obviously, that was a very specific instance.
Did you take any action?
No, I was very timid and not empowered back then.
Oh, that sucks. Well, now you've taught a workshop. There's no way that'll happen again.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I am definitely a little bit more willing to do stuff like that, like set boundaries. But the part that blows my mind is like instances like that where I'm like, oh, there are actually people out there who don't realize some of these things are very bothersome and intrusive. And like little mosquito bites.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do think the awareness part is really just like, people don't know these concepts out there.
Yeah, and I guess that the whole crux is there's a difference between someone who says you shouldn't be bothered and someone says, oh, that bothers you. You know what I mean? Like,
like being respectful.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I guess we're not, I'm not, and you are obviously your own person. I'm not condemning certain types of actions. What I'm condemning is, stepping on others, and that it's the old thing, your rights end where other people's begin. So if you have that interaction with your resident and they get corrected and then they continue to do that, then that is unacceptable for sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So I think, you know, we're going back to the whole concept of how when this whole thing started and people started protesting and saying, like, if you're not actively anti-racist, then maybe you're not on the right side of the fence. It got me thinking a lot about how, like, well, I don't know how proactive and, like, visible I want to be. I'm just not that kind of person. I'm thinking, like, am I being useless and standing by the wayside because I am not doing enough? But yeah, I mean, I realized just by doing little things like this, I actually was helping out, like the microaggression workshop, mostly because, like, to me, I didn't even really actually felt that was something super powerful. But then, like, looking back and seeing, like, all the press release or like all the news that's surfacing, I realize a lot of it probably is just education, because I don't know, some people are unintentionally benignly ignorant, I guess.
Yeah.
So
it's tough to change people after a certain age too. So you know what I mean? It's good to get them while they're young. And that seems to always be the age of the protesters, is 20 somethings. They're getting to be all of everybody on this one. Pretty much all of America is involved in this here protest. So
I think so.
That's interesting.
Yeah. When we went to, so there was a, I guess maybe a protest demonstration, I'm not sure what it's called, but an event called White Coats for Black Lives yesterday, where physicians wore their white coats and kneeled outside of the hospital for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, which is, as you know, the yeah. time length that the officer kneeled on Mr. Floyd. There was doctors of all ages and all races, and I do think people just feel like, I don't know, I mean, maybe doctors are not quite the same population, but I still think like this is affecting everybody.
Yeah, nobody wants to see anybody killed in the street, and they don't want to yeah. see the same person killed in the street over and over again, especially, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I really do think that, unfortunately, it was like how powerful that image was. Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely, was it, does anyone know where the tape came from?
I was curious about that. I mean, it was videotaped by via a phone camera. And the individual that was on the phone was speaking into the camera the whole time. But I don't know if anybody has like actually spoken to that individual. I haven't dug around in the news enough. But I mean, just, I can't imagine that person's feeling of like, I am firsthand witnessing this and I feel so powerless that all I can do is record.
Yeah.
And disseminate this information.
One thing that, I mean, I know it's not, I don't know, whatever. The point being is this, when I saw the video as having been a ski patroller, hearing him, well, and there had to have been over, I think they said over a minute or so after he passed out that before they even picked him up. But I might have just kept filming like the lady because he was speaking, and anyone who's speaking is breathing. You know what I mean? So I feel bad because, and it's stupid to feel bad about a fictitious scenario, but I think if I was in that scenario, just like the videographer, I would have just sat there and videoed. I mean, if I would have thought his life was going to end, I would like to think that I would have at least got closer to the officers to the point where they had to stand up. You know what I mean? Like, they would have to stand up if someone approached them. That's just how cops work.
I mean, I think there's just a genuine fear. As far as I understand from the video, the bystanders made comments that they believe the person had, Mr. Floyd had passed, and that they should let go because they believe he had passed. But I mean, people are still afraid to approach.
Yeah, like, yeah. Those are killer.
Like you were, yeah. Like I was killers. Telling you yesterday.
Government sanctioned trained killers out there on the street.
And well, and it's just, I know your life experience is different, but most people don't want to actively approach a physically violent, potentially physically violent situation. So like, just like I was saying yesterday, when a guy postured at me, my immediate reaction was, I am done with this interaction. I just like left, you know, like in no circumstance would I have tried, like you said, what you did. Like there's very, very high possibility if you feel like somebody's going to start using violence, you would use violence back. Like, I think probably, maybe this is overgeneralizing, I think the majority of people would not. They would opt to leave the situation.
Well, I've done that too, but...
And I think that's, to me, obviously this is presumptuous, but I think that might have been what happened, is people don't necessarily want to provoke or approach and put themselves into a very potentially violent situation any further. So they feel like no matter what, I'm going to have to like maintain some sort of safety for myself.
You have
myself.
To fear for your own life when you're watching someone kill someone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what it is. Yeah. You see four trained killers killing someone, you have to fear for your own life, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that was the same scenario as, I'm sorry, I can't recall that, that guy's name, but when he was shot, when he was pulled over by a police officer.
Yeah, and his, the Facebook one.
Yeah, and his girlfriend.
Yeah, Facebook lived it.
Remained, yeah, she remained extremely calm.
I couldn't believe that.
She remained extremely calm, but she was extremely afraid, and she wasn't gonna, like, try to do any physical actions to even take care of her partner, because it's just an unpredictable and potentially violent situation. And she has to take her own safety into account. Yeah. And at that moment, you feel like, I wish I wasn't so powerless and out of control. But all I can do is document. Because, and I think that is one of the benefits right now, is with documentation, there is proof of the truth.
Yeah. Nothing would have happened if this was 1991 and this had happened to him in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
No one would ever even fucking known about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is some differences with, as, you know, modernization progressed, that the way we can approach these specific instances change, because now there's just more tools to help us discover what the truth actually was. Yeah. Which is, I mean, it sucks to watch them though, but yeah.
I mean, the riots are, and protests are effective communication. I've said it before. I mean, it's a painful way to grow, but I mean, there's no ignoring them. You know what I mean? If you're the chief of police in Detroit right now, you're thinking to yourself, okay, boys, let's reassess the way we do things. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Not nothing on Detroit. I don't know shit about Detroit. No, I'm just saying Minneapolis is where it happened, but I'm just saying cities all over America. If you're the police chief and there's, and I said,
or LA, or,
well, I said Detroit because I don't specifically know if there are riots there, but I'm sure there probably are.
Oh, but, yeah. And Pittsburgh and like people are demanding change from a city level, which is also, I think, really helpful.
Do you know, is the police chief elected? The chief of police, or is he appointed?
I don't think he's elected.
Yeah, that should, because sheriffs are elected, and I think police chiefs should be elected. Wouldn't that be a much better system, so that when this shit happened, we just put somebody in that we knew was more similarly goal-oriented to the public, I guess? Because we could literally, that's the way sheriffs are. I don't know, I'll have to look that up.
Elections is also intrinsically difficult, because then they can be bought.
It's still better than appointed. Appointed, or, you know, is an inside job the whole way. There's no way to change the mindset of an establishment when it's appointing its own successors. So if you are in charge as a people into voting in a new police chief, you can change the entire mindset of the police station, because people who go against the police chief will get fired. You know what I mean?
Can you just fire somebody for going against your thoughts?
I mean, if you're saying we're gonna take de-escalation training as a blah blah blah, and you got a bunch of lieutenants going, this is bullshit, you know, like that, then you can say, we'll get on board, take the training, or you're fired. This is now a requirement.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I was just talking about culture change. I was talking to some of my coworkers about how you truly can do it in a top-down fashion if you really are committed. And one of the things I admire about my institution is that I think there is a very much a top-down focus on, like, you're here because you want to provide mentorship for people in the next generation. And so there is this feeling of, hey, if you're not going to, like, devote time to answer questions, to reach out and help people who are still in training and need your support, then you're not really welcome to work in this environment. So I think if, you know, they're going to address, like, whatever, microaggression, discrimination from a top-down fashion, it's like kind of like you said, maybe they'll just be like, you're probably not going to be welcome to work here if you're not going to be very proactive about this.
Yeah. And what bothers me about that isn't when it happens at a hospital. I understand that at a hospital, you need a certain type. I mean, it's a production facility. Like anything, you need rules to keep the machine working. And what scares people about it, myself included, is that when you start saying, you can't say this, you can't say that, because that is classified as this, and we don't do that here. That's what you're talking about, is when, as far as top-down organization comes, or at least that's what I fear when you talk about top-down organization comes, because there are people who enjoy that that way of life, and they're not all bad, and they're from all different backgrounds, you know what I mean? But I'm getting off in the weeds here. I guess what I'm saying is, it's great for a hospital. I don't think it's good for a government to say that, because you should still be able to go to a comedy club and say some weird stuff that's going to offend some people. And the crowd will let you know if you're wrong. You say that enough times, you'll abandon the bit and wonder why you ever thought it was funny if no one takes the bait. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it just depends on the kind of message you're trying to deliver. Is it like a lot of specific rules and policies you have to follow, or is it just some sort of very, like, broad principle,
right,
that you want to try to disseminate?
It's all like 1984, the book, you know what I mean, though? Like, when you create an environment where people are encouraged to tell on their neighbor, which is, we're touching on that, honestly, with our internet capabilities now. When you have a society that's like that, you get this 1984-esque doublespeak type of language where people have to use, like, memes and emojis and stuff like that, just so, and spell things weird with numbers, and while they're communicating with one another, say, you just tap dance around things, but say the same thing. So the speech is still going to exist. I think it's better to keep it out in the open, and then you at least can identify what type of person you're dealing with, because that person is going to communicate with their fellow comrades in their, what do they call that, nomenclature. You know what I mean?
Mm-mm.
I'm saying when you make speech illegal, you just create new forms of speech. And those groups of people are now going to work in secrecy rather than in the open.
Yeah, I suppose. There's always going to be people who feel like speech is a fundamental right.
I think it's a great tool for understanding. Communication is. And if you allow someone to communicate their honest feelings, whether they be wrong or right, you know if that's the type of person you want in your life. And if that's not the type of person you want in your life, then at least you got a heads up right out of the gate. You know?
Yeah. I was just thinking. It is difficult because it's such a fine distinction between, like, I'm sure tons and billions of people have been debating about this and how to, like, best implement some sort of in-between, but, like, the fight for being able to say whatever the fuck you want to say and still protecting and respecting the rights of other people.
Yeah, how to figure out where your rights end and someone else's begin. Where is that point?
Yeah.
Is there a right to not be offended? Is being offended constantly a systematic form of persecution, or what do you want to call it? I mean, all those things get very gray.
Yeah, but honestly, I mean, like, speech is really just one part of it. In terms of, like, the culture, there's just, like, The reason that speech matters is in the greater context of this cultural bias. Like, when you allow a certain type of speech to propagate, you're also kind of instilling the belief of that it is okay to see them, to see some people as being different and to not treat them necessarily the same. And that's, I think, one of the main arguments against, like, allowing people to say whatever they want to say.
That is.
I mean, I do think that's weird to be like, you know, it's okay to call Chinese people chink or ching ching Chinaman, because then it kind of goes to the mentality of like, yeah, they're these like weird, obviously I talk about Chinese because that's what I'm kind of more familiar with, but like, that's kind of okay, and it kind of like makes them seem exotic and weird people, and maybe like not like normal white people because they look weird, they look different, they have their like long hair all up in a braid, you know, and they always have their eyes like slanted and
And, I don't know. And the thing is when I have a conversation with you and I realize these areas bother you, I don't go into those areas anymore. But if I was a famous comedian and I was having a friend talk with Joe Coy, Joe Coy could probably go there and make those jokes, you know, and he would make fun with it. And it's just two different people.
And I mean, I definitely agree. And that's like the very gray distinction, right? Like, you can make those jokes with me in private. But it's because we already have such a clear establishment of each other's understanding of where we come from. And it's very different when like a rando old white dude came up to me and were like, "You're so exotic. Are you from Japan?" Like, no, I don't even know you.
Yeah.
I literally just met you. Like, I don't know if you think it's appropriate, but I don't.
I wouldn't do it myself. No, I don't think and this is where the whole crux of the thing is even if I could justify it in my own head, I would know that it's inappropriate, you know? Like, I don't make the rules. Like, I don't have a God complex. Like, if society tells me I can't do it, eventually I guess I'll have to stop doing it. But that doesn't mean I can't fight along the way for some things. And I'm not fighting for calling you whatever it is you don't want to be called. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, I don't know what I'm trying to say, actually. I wouldn't call you whatever you said there, even in public. Like you said, between me and you, in private's fine, or I would never do that in public, you know what I mean? Just because I understand that you would feel like a representative to strangers.
Oh, sorry. That reminds me of such a funny, randos thing that happened with my friend John. You remember John? So
Seattle John?
Yeah. So we went to Arizona for a football game because we're all playing in the pep band. And a lady approached him and just like greeted him and said, "Welcome to America."
Oh, no.
He was like, "What?
Arizona, you said?"
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. And I mean, I feel like that's like a very classic, like, unintentional microaggression, right?
How old was the woman?
I think just like an adult God. Football fan. But what amazes how how just like mind blowing is that somebody? But like, okay, again, that goes to microaggression. It's just like so unintentional. People don't realize it, or like, so I do this sometimes too. Actually, one of the things that bothers a lot of people that are not from America is when you say something like, "Oh, your English is so good." And I actually do that sometimes myself, and I have to check myself because I'm like, you know, I also get really annoyed when sometimes people say that to me with the...
I've heard people say that to you.
Yeah, especially only if because they have this presumption that like your English shouldn't be that good. And that's why... It's a microaggression, right? It's kind of the opposite. They're saying the opposite of like what they're actually feeling. It's like, they're like, "Ew, I never expected that your English would be that good.
What it maybe roots down to is, you know that if you had never spoken to this person, they would walk away thinking that you were some sort of...
Yeah, like I didn't understand English or something. Yeah.
So you're like, oh, I'm glad I talked to you, because otherwise you'd have just subjugated me to this group for whatever function you needed.
Yeah.
But luckily, lady at a football game doesn't have that much influence over John.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
She can't hold him back. She's still in Arizona. He's killing it up in Seattle.
I mean, I think those things are so much more worth addressing. Now I'm just like recounting all my own life experiences, but they're like so much more difficult to address, because you're kind of like, well, obviously this person doesn't think they're being an asshole, versus like instances where I was just walking in the parking lot and somebody randomly came up and been like, go back to your country. And you're like,
has that happened?
Yeah, it happened to me when I was growing up. That's why I was like, you know, like racism actually does happen.
Yeah.
But you kind of stand there and you're just like, well, I'm guessing this person is being racist, but they probably also know they're being racist and they just don't like me. So that's a little bit different than addressing a microaggression, where it's like there might be actually more room for change with that other person because they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize that was very offensive. Yeah,
the unintentional ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can correct the unintentional ones. And I think that's what that video, to bring it all home, was really trying to say, is that all these things are mosquito bites. They add up. And if we use this action plan, the unintentional ones might be corrected, and there'll be fewer mosquitoes. At least life will be a little bit more tolerable.
Yeah, I fucking hate mosquitoes.
You know how you get rid of mosquitoes, right?
You slap them.
You drain the swamp.
Oh.
I'm sorry. That's supposed to be funny. It's a political campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that is how you get rid of mosquitoes. You drain pools of water everywhere in the neighborhood. That's how they fight malaria. They go around with hoes and shovels. Anyway. That's true. All right, dear. Well, should we wrap it up?
Sure.
Thanks for coming up on the show.
Yeah.
What are we going to call this segment?
I don't know. Microaggression. Mosquitoes.
What about microcho?
No. God.
Cindy Hay.
Wait, what?
Microaggression workshop.
I was going to say something like Ching Ching China Woman.
Oh my God. too much talk from China. See, I have trouble even saying this because it feels like we're... I don't know why I would even if we weren't.
So, I mean, I was going to comment on that. It goes to another thing that makes it so, so gray, right? It's like when I make Asian or Chinese people joke, it's like totally considered acceptable. I'm not offended. My friends are not offended. Like nobody around me is offended because I feel like I am joking on myself. But even, and like, you know, I grew up with a lot of Asian friends and we all say jokes like that to each other. But definitely if it's like from somebody on the outside, we're like, that's not cool. You know, you just cannot deliver that joke in the same way. And that's why, like, when Margaret Cho or Ali Wong say those jokes, I'm like, I love you. You're hilarious. You're my role model. But when, like, you know, say a white man try to do that same kind of joke on stage, I'm like, it's funny because you're a comedian and you're telling a joke right now. And I take that you're doing it as a joke, but it's not nearly as funny as if you were Margaret Cho or Ali Wong, you know? You know what I'm saying? Like, you take it from a very different stance because it's not internalized. You're not like sharing your life experience. I don't know. It might be an experience, but I think it's more of an observation versus like when I say something about making fun of Chinese people, it's kind of like deprecating in a way because I'm also making fun of myself.
Well, there's also not a huge threat because you see another person who's Chinese make a Chinese joke and you're not really much of a threat that they're racist against Chinese people. They're probably joking. But if you saw a white guy say the same joke, there is a threat that he might be racist. And that's an unknown. Right. And unknown is the fear is the basis of all fear.
Yeah, like what is his intention? But I think that's why, like when you deliver a joke, if you are able to deliver it, which is the art of comedy, right? In a way that is very safe, in a way that holds the audience of like, we're in this room together to enjoy this joke.
Mm-hmm.
Then like you eliminate that fear.
Yeah. And that's why I want to be in that group of people where it's a mutual understanding. If we're all standing in this circle, that we're all a target. Everyone standing in the circle is a target. You know what I mean? And that's fine. I know when I'm not standing in that circle. Like, I'm going to hurt some people's feelings along the way, but I'm going to try not to hurt their feelings twice. You know? Mm-hmm. And when I'm not standing in that circle, I'm not going to hand out those same ear beatings. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Check yourself.
Check yourself.
Maybe that's a segment.
Maybe that is. Let's end on that. I love it. Check yourself. All right. That was the episode. I was surprised we talked longer than I thought we would. We were thinking 20 minutes, you know, go over the PowerPoint presentation. I think we rattled on for almost an hour. On tape, though. You know, that's... I've said it before on the podcast, I really do feel like recording conversations makes them more hostile. Or at least the threat of future hostility is more present. Does that make sense? Anyway, that seems to create a little bit of doublespeak. Cindy and I, we like to watch The Voice. That's right, because I'm cool. And sure, it's a pop music powerhouse, big money, cookie cutter type of situation. At least that's how the cynical me would have framed it. But to be honest with you, folks singing is as old as folks, I would think. And it's nice to hear a good singer sing. These particular two singers, I asked Cindy what song she would like, and this is her jam right now. It's a cover of the Billie Eilish song, something rather when it's over. God damn, I don't remember what it's called. This is Joanne Sirinko and Broderick, I think it's Broderick Chambers. And this song is Billie Eilish's When the Party's Over. There we go. Pretty good version. They do these duets where they're working together and eliminating each other. Weird. Damn it. There's a video. And I shut the phone off. Sometimes.
Nachos. Nachos.